You are very welcome to Commerce Talk, the podcast that is proudly brought to you by Smart OSC.
I'm sure you've been through some of the experience I have where I want the thing, I click onto the payment. It asked me to fill in about 3 pages. Once it got to the end, it basically rejected my transaction and then it reset my card. That is quite infuriating.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Commerce Talk from Smart OSC, the podcast that keeps you one step ahead. I am your host, Aziza O'Byrne. This is season 2, episode 6. It's hard to believe, but you know what? Time flies when you are having brilliant conversations with brilliant people. Now, while we're always looking to the future, today we are talking about the transformational power of a seamless payment journey. And joining me today, I am absolutely delighted. I would describe this person as a visionary and unstoppable leader in this space. Please join me in welcoming the country director of Stripe in Thailand, Mr. T. Shayakul. T, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Aziza. You're very kind to say that.
It's true. And I am delighted to have you here. And you know what? There is also a wonderful link that I have with home now, thanks to you, because as we all know, Stripe, the founders are from Ireland, which is where I am from. So with that in mind, I'd like to also say welcome in Irish. So Fáilte.
And you know, one trivia that I had the other day is that Thailand actually have a high GDP than Ireland.
Starting strong with the facts, right? So I'm going to start this episode a little differently. And I think you will know better than anyone, and our listeners may know this very well too, is that you can tell a lot about a person based on their own purchasing behaviors online. So as that's going to be kind of a central conversation point for us today, I'm going to introduce a new feature with you, showcasing this new feature, T. I'm going to ask you to play a little game of Priceless and Pitfall. I'm going to ask you about 2 online purchases that you've had in your life. One that brought priceless value to your life, something that you're delighted that you bought, and another that maybe was a pitfall that was regrettable or maybe just didn't meet expectations. So I'll hand it over to you.
You know, I really love this icebreaker, and I'll have to remember to use it for my future session as well.
Yes.
Priceless, thinking about it, I think the one that really comes to mind is that I haven't really been traveling quite as much with my family. To be honest, I can't even remember the last time I've been traveling with my mom, my 2 siblings, and my wife and my son. So later this year, we're actually putting together a trip where we're going to go to Japan. So obviously, buying a flight ticket, I had to do that online. And it's not cheap, really, to do all of that for everyone. But to think that my mom is getting old, I honestly don't know whether this is our first trip together. It could actually be our last. But to think that some of this traveling, a lot of the money that we use, I think the best use of it from experience, from a lot of reading also, is just to build memories. So I think that money, it may cost a lot, but I think that is going to be worth it. Pitfall, also another interesting question. The only thing that comes to mind is that we are using a lot of the platforms to buy a lot of marketplaces, to buy a lot of stuff, right? You can get a lot of really good bargains from that. I've tried a lot of those too. And there are a lot of the times when I would, for electronics, I would go for the cheaper options, which are stuff produced within the region, right? That are not as expensive as the European, Japanese, or American built. But it turns out that many of those tend to break very, very quickly. And I don't even know who I need to return it to, or sometimes I just like can't even be bothered to return. It just becomes a lot of junk. So it is actually, even though it's cheap, sometimes I have to keep reminding myself that it's better to pay for quality.
That's so, so true. I've had so many experiences as well with that, where you're like, you know what, this is really handy. This is perfect. But it actually, the hardship of just going through it, breaking and then trying to find a replacement and all of that, it's just not worth it. I really love what you said there about the priceless experiences. I think that is a beautiful introduction to this feature, because you cannot put money on memories. And that is one joy that we see with the world of e-commerce, is those priceless experiences that you can have with your family and loved ones. One of my own favorites, while we're talking about our mothers, one of my own favorite pitfall purchases came from my own mother, who one year went on, she'll laugh at this story and she'll laugh at me telling this story. one year she went online and she, on a marketplace, bought herself veneers. You know, the things that you put on your teeth to make your, the replacement teeth that make them whiter and shinier and the American kind of smile. She bought those online and it was terrifying.
Some things are probably not made to be bought online.
Oh, so I think that tells us about you. You have maybe a preference for meaningful moments, that you treasure your time with your family, treasure great experiences, and you'd prefer better quality electronics going forward.
Good things cost money. You get what you pay for.
So I guess to talk about some of the things that you've been doing over the last couple of years at Stripe, you and your team were responsible for launching Stripe in Thailand just last year, which was something that grabbed a lot of attention. It was a huge moment. And I think for the time that we're in now, with the economy kind of growing so quickly in Thailand, I know this is a very big personal highlight for you. I'd love to know, in the time leading up to this launch, if you could tell us a bit about that, a bit about some of the barriers that businesses were facing when it came to their online payment structures, and how Stripe is helping to break down those barriers for businesses.
Do you know, an analogy that I often like to use with regards to this question is that if you think back to us back in the early 2000s, when we were pretty happy to have that Nokia 3310, the one that you can call, you can answer, receive the call very easily, you can use it to throw at people and then it will never break. Those things are great, right? And it's good enough for us communication during that time. And it's relatively convenient. Is it the best product? Obviously not with this standard, but it was good enough for that. I see Stripe as being basically a smartphone coming into a Nokia 3310 market, in the sense that for many of the users here, all they have known so far is a lot of the local payment gateway, which are by all means good at what they do, good enough for the tasks that they need to get done. But if the users have some unmet need of needing things like going international, accepting reliably international payment, using subscription payment, or get onboarded very, very quickly, those things they would not be able to do with the current option quite as easily. The same way though with someone with a Nokia 3310, right? That if they're going to see their smartphone at that point and all they need is just receiving and making calls, they're never going to need a smartphone. And fair enough, there are going to be people like that who is happy with that phone. But a lot, the large majority of us would actually want to know what Wi-Fi is, how do we actually use a smartphone, how do we use a lot of the app on there. And it does take us to basically educate them, because all they can see, if they don't know that this cool gadget, cool features exist, all they see is something that's three times the size, twice the price. So a lot of the good technology, the way I want to summarize it, that a lot of the good technology, it can cost a little bit more, but it can actually bring in that much more utility and values to your business. And that's how I see Stripe coming to Thailand, bringing in options with better solutions that hopefully can answer a lot of the needs of businesses that are looking to integrate online more.
That's a great analogy. And I think it's really interesting because in a way, it's almost just showing what you can have, the seamless experience that you can have, and bringing people along on that journey and letting them come through when they're ready and when it makes sense for them to make that big step. I know that you guys at Stripe do a lot of work with opening up opportunities for startups. And I saw a figure, I think it was in your end of year note for 2022, maybe it was, where it was mentioned that, it blew my mind, which was that 1,000 new ventures launch every single day. And on that, I'd like to just ask, what does that look like over on this side of the world? And how does having the right payment infrastructure transform the future for these startups?
If you actually think about startups, right, and Stripe started as a startup itself as well back in 2010, what do they want? They want to be able to have seamless payment experience. They don't want to spend a lot of resource thinking about any of this payment stuff. They want to be able to onboard within minutes, really. And ideally, they want to be able to have a lot of technologies to go into different business models that goes along with the vision of their whole business. These are the things that Stripe answers the call for those startups. You can actually get onboarded within minutes and start receiving money within that time as well. You can actually just, everything is very self-guided. There's a lot of documentation online that you can go online right now and see how the technical integration should be. So all of these startups can actually get integrated, get onboarded without actually even talking to any one of us. And we have a lot of options in our dashboard for you to choose if you want to do more subscription or if you are more of a marketplace. There's a lot of tools which you can actually play around with, which are very self-explanatory, and that can fit within whatever business models. All of those functions are available in Thailand, similar to what the American startups have access to in America as well. And that's the power of Stripe that we bring in to any startups that just want to start accepting payments.
And do you see it as a very exciting time in Thailand for startups at the moment?
I think Thailand is a very, very interesting market and intersection of the startup, the 4 million as small, medium businesses and the large enterprise coming in. There's still so much rooms and a lot of support from the government as well in terms of trying to cultivate this startup environment. A lot of the things to ensure that we can have a lot more homegrown startups community coming up. So I really think that this is that inflection point for many of those startups that they're going on this journey, and Stripe is here as basically an alternative option that can present to them, that can help them to rocket boost their growth, both domestically and also internationally.
Wow, it's such an exciting time. We recently, actually just speaking about some businesses in Thailand, we recently had a brilliant chat with the CEO of Duhome, a very well-known family business in Thailand, who recently just celebrated 40 years of business, which was just wonderful to see. And, you know, talking about their journey, we're looking at kind of some of the key things for their success over the last 40 years. And I know recently you were involved with an event with the Harvard Business School Association, where a number of very high level speakers spoke about the keys to success for family business. So I'm wondering if you would mind sharing some of the insights that you gained from that event.
It was pretty cool to have a lot of these people from CP Group, from Central, from Bangkok Bank, actually being there at the events and actually sharing a lot of their experience. Truth be told, makes me wonder how much deeper they can actually go into. But they do share, they were pretty honest about the discussion. The one framework that was discussed during the session that actually was interesting to reflect, not just for family business, but also for any venture, was this 6C framework that they have, which is, number one is you need to have a clear structure. Specifically for family business, it's having a clear family constitution, so you know that who does what, who owns what. Second C is compensation. Getting that sorted at the beginning of who gets what is also very important. And I think many businesses will attest that you set that wrong, that can create a lot of issues down the line. Third C is communication. So for family business, there's going to be different generations. So being able to communicate between one generation to the next, know what mode of communication makes sense, is paramount. That goes for any business, especially in this world of hybrid remote working as well. We can't just rely on the usual communication. Fourth C, conflict resolution. You work with your family, there are going to be a lot of feelings being hurt. And setting a clear rule, clear ground in terms of what you do with the whole conflict is very, very important. And I think this is something that I'm sure many of us leaders and many of us workers can also learn to deal with in our lives as well, both businesses and also personal. Being able to go through all of those conflict and know how to come out of it with a win-win resolution is important. Fifthly, care and compassion. I think this one is important for family business because, hey, you're dealing with family members. That it's very, very personal. So remember that there are the person behind that role is paramount. And knowing that how people care about them, be more empathetic with them, is a very good recipe towards a good and well-run business. This goes with the how we run business as well, right? That people can't just be numbers. They can't just be a cog in the wheels. How do we make sure that they do feel careful. And the last thing, the sixth one, is change. So being ready for change, being ready to adapt to the situation. Things may work well for 10 years, but it may not work once, say, COVID hit, or once the money runs out, one business go bankrupt. So how can you build your structure to be resilient to all of those change will be very, very important towards a sustainable, both family business and also any business at all.
They are very valuable pieces. I think there's a lot there, as you said, that could be brought forward into businesses in general, even into just the environment of an office. There's so much there. And I think that will bring a lot of value to our listeners. So thank you so much for sharing that. Through all of our episodes with everyone that we've spoken to, at the heart of everything, it's always the customer. And it's a question that I really love to ask our guests, because even from different perspectives, I think it's really important to showcase. So from your standpoint, from what you've seen over the last maybe 2 years, what would be, we spoke about it a bit earlier, you know, what would be some of the emerging customer needs that you've seen? And with those needs in mind, how best can businesses meet those needs?
Let me tell you a story. We actually had this one customer recently who came to us and said that they have a very, very bad experience with regards to their existing payment processes. And there's a lot of complaints from their customers, to the point that they felt that they really need to find something to change on all of that. They came to Stripe and we listened to their complaint. They wanted to change, but they're also not sure whether Stripe could actually help to address the need for them or not. So what we actually propose is, of course, okay, why don't you, you can definitely try us and then see how we compare with regards to the previous regime, how they're doing. The result from all of that is very positive, in the sense that they've managed to basically nearly get their level of complaint down to nearly zero. And it has increased a lot of their conversion rate for their platform significantly on that point. And we look forward to seeing how well it is going in the next quarter or towards the end of the year as well. What this highlights to me is that whatever the business is actually doing, the proof in the pudding is that you need to be able to help them to increase their return on investment. So if they're going to change payment processor, they're going to adapt some new business models, whatever they're doing, the end return has to be, has to justify whatever they're changing. What we have done well, at least for this user, and it's relatively universal, is that we're able to improve a lot of the checkout experience of their end customers, so that once they get into the checkout period, they don't just leave. Because I'm sure you've been through some of the experience I have, where I want something, I click onto the payment, it asked me to fill in about 3 pages. Once it got to the end, it basically rejected my transactions.
Oh yeah.
And then it reset my card. That is quite infuriating.
Oh, that pain, I know it well.
It can happen a lot more often than you think. And many people may not even realize that it's happening until they started to dig deeper into where the conversion actually falls off. So I think there's a lot of those basic hygiene that we can actually bring into a lot of these users and actually help them to just get that better return on investment for the businesses that they do.
It's a great point, actually, because even in my own head, when I was asking that question, I was just thinking of the end point, but actually there's the whole other side of that that you mentioned there. And it's that experience of the entering your card details in 2 or 3 times in a row, and that pain, that could be a horror movie.
It's one of those that it sounds simple,
yeah,
in the sense, why can't anyone do it? But it's not easy. Payment is not simple, right? So that's why at least we're able to come here and provide that certainty. It's a bit like you can outsource all of those payment infrastructure to us, so you can focus all of your engineering resource, all of your operational time on doing what you do best to serve your end customer.
And zooming out and kind of having a wider lens on emerging trends in general in the world of e-commerce, would there be any emerging trends that you're keeping a close eye on at the moment?
A couple of things that I would highlight is that a lot of the transactions that we see right now is basically just a simple payment processing, right? That you go in, you check out, you buy the stuff. And there's going to be a lot more companies that want to do more complex payment needs for their customers. And when you say complex, I mean things like subscription. Instead of you having to buy everything every month, you can actually give them the peace of mind of the utility, i.e. I want a water purifier. I don't have to buy a water purifier myself, right? I can just pay, say, 200 baht, and then I get that water purifier plus all the maintenance. So instead of me buying asset, I now buy utility from that. We've seen a lot of those subscription usages coming up worldwide. It's going to go up by 5 times in the next 10 years. And I think that in Thailand, we're going to start to see a lot more of that. Similarly, marketplaces where you're connecting buyers and the sellers, we see a lot more of that in e-commerce, basically from just a retail e-commerce, but potentially a lot more users are going to start to want to do that in their little ecosystem as well. So many of those complex use cases are going to start coming up to satisfy, and it's going to require a lot more complex payment processing to help out as well. Second one that I want to highlight also is cross-border payments. You want to buy stuff from the US or you want to buy stuff from Australia. Right now, for some website, it can be relatively straightforward. But from others, you still have to jump through a lot of hoops. You may have to end up basically just using some payment processing that you don't even trust, that you don't know whether they're actually going to steal your money or not. You may actually have to pay very high payment fees. It's very difficult to get a refund, or whatever it is, there's a lot of issues that come from trying to transact overseas. And from the merchant side, Thai merchants have a lot of amazing service and products that is ripe to go overseas. How easy would it be for them to accept money from overseas without a lot of the issues, a lot of the effects that they need to think about, a lot of the customs? The number of issues that those merchants have to deal with are also countless. So being able to make all of that simple is going to be a lot of focuses for Stripe, and I'm sure a lot of other processors worldwide as well.
Yeah, that's interesting that you said that. Our last guest actually had that as one of her emerging trends too. And I think all of our online experiences have zero borders, have zero, you know, barriers. So the purchasing experience will have to follow suit. And I think it's really interesting, all of the pain points that you mentioned there, and a lot of opportunities for people to help serve those pain points too, as we go into the future. Before I get to my final question, when we're talking about the future, are there any things that are coming up for Stripe that you're very excited about from your team's perspective?
Stripe in Thailand, we launched last year, and it's been pretty exciting to see the reception of a lot of the users and the different use cases that they're actually using within the country. We are continuously trying to figure out what are some of the product solutions that could serve the Southeast Asia, the enterprise market within Stripe. And to be honest, there are quite a few coming up in the pipeline that we are hoping to announce in the coming months as well. So please stay tuned.
Ah, it's so exciting. And I'm going to be staying tuned to your LinkedIn for sure. And I'm going to say this to everyone listening as well, is your LinkedIn is a great place to be. And it leads us into our last question of this interview, which is, I absolutely love the book reviews that you share on your LinkedIn. And for anyone listening, I would highly recommend you to follow T on LinkedIn. And I think there would be a lot of value for our listeners. So as our last question, given all that you've been through in your career, everywhere you've been in the world, what are two books that have been very helpful for your career as a leader and even just personally?
It's a super interesting question because having read quite a few, I think there are probably only a few that really sticks with you as much. And to be honest, I wish I could go through or synthesize a lot more of them and try to retain more information. But if you ask for two books, I would say number one is Culture Code, which is a book that talks about the three aspects that any company's organization groups need in order to develop a very high functional cultures. Those are essentially create a safe psychological safety, create a place where people can be vulnerable, and creates a place where people can feel purposeful. these are essentially whatever other books that I read down the line regarding culture, it usually comes back to one of these three. And having also managed my previous role as another country manager at another startup called Traveloka, and also being here at Stripe and reflecting on a lot of my experiences, those three are super important. And it's a good book for me to go back and reread in terms of like, I don't think that I've created a safe enough workplace yet. Let me just go back and see what are some of the points that I need. How do I make my workplace a bit more purposeful? And what do I need to do to make people be more vulnerable? Because I really find that those three points are super important if you want the people to be comfortable and if you want people to really perform to their highest ability. Second book, which is my favorite book from last year that I've read. I'm a new father, so my son is about 22 months old already. So my wife, every once in a while, she's part of this mommy group, like Asian mommy group, and they would recommend a few books about what you should read in order to grow up. A lot of those books are, I'm not going to be able to read a lot of them, and many of them are probably quite too preachy for my liking anyway. But one that was really highly recommended by that group that I ended up picking up is this book called Adult Children of Emotionally Immature Parents. So the general summary of the book is that it goes through how parents or caretakers can be emotionally immature when they're taking care of the kids. And a lot of those immaturity can actually create a lot of issues to those kids down the line going forward. So knowing how sometimes some of the insecurity or trauma that we've been growing up with might actually be coming from our parents, our caretakers, who are trying their best, but they're just not matured enough at that point in time to really do what needed to be done, and how we can recognize some of that in us, in our parents, and how we can find ways to be at peace with ourselves or manage some of those emotionally immature elders in a better ways. The book has been helpful for me because it actually got me to reflect a little bit about my upbringing, that how I grew up, what are some of the things that without this frame, I may not have seen quite as clearly. And that also has helped me to basically try to recognize some of those and try also not to pass down the not so nice thing down to my kid. So being able to be more introspective is helpful for me, and hopefully helpful for me as a caretaker for the next generations.
Those are two amazing book recommendations, and there's something really lovely in the art, and we spoke about it before, the art of that reflection and reflecting on your own experiences and how you present yourself to others, and consistently having that as a feedback loop to yourself in your personal life and in your professional life, so that you're bettering the experiences of others, but also improving your own experiences, I think, as well as you go forward. And I think that's such a beautiful note to end on, T. Thank you so much for your time today. Thank you so much for everything that you've given us. And I just want to wish you the best luck with the future work that you're doing at Stripe. I hope you have a wonderful holiday with your family as well. And congratulations on being a new father too. Congratulations on it all.
Thank you so much. And thank you for the opportunity to be here.
Yeah, there you go. Another few brilliant book recommendations to add to the collection, and another great conversation. A huge thank you to T. Shiokul, Country Director for Stripe in Thailand, and his entire team for making that conversation possible today. We really hope that you enjoyed it. We hope that you took something valuable from it. And it doesn't have to end here. You can listen back. We've so many more brilliant episodes, so many great chats from leaders around the world, great insights to be shared. You can listen back now. This is Commerce Talk, the podcast that keeps you one step ahead. We are Smart OSCE. I have been your host, Aziza O'Byrne. If you get the chance, give us a follow on LinkedIn, or you can head over to smartosc.com and see us there. Until next time.